Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
is 2000. The world has just rang in a new millennium. We partied like it was 1999, and we worried that everything was going to crash when it didn't. In March of that year, something strange came up on the black market. The black market at the time was considered a place to buy stuff without taxes. But what came up was a video and a listing. That video was a video asking for 600 million rupee in order to buy a actual mummy and sarcophagus. This is Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem, and we're going to go through a little mayhem with the mystery of the Persian princess. Welcome, everybody, to a team of voices. I want to thank Deb and everything she does. Thank AP for getting us up and running. And want to thank everybody else who listens in. At this time, I'm going to bring a couple people in on our call and our show. And welcome, Hatter. How you doing today?
I'm just fine, Jay. Thank you.
And Raconteur, how are you?
Who's that, me? I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I guess it's you. So we're going to go over a little something called The Mystery of the Persian Princess. Have you guys ever heard of this story prior to this show?
I vaguely remember them finding the sarcophagus, but not with the Twitch blood, so this is going to be fun.
Matter, did you hear about this at all?
Same with Raconteur. I think I remember a little bit of it, but I don't remember the details.
Excellent.
Being that the
subject
matter was interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was a strange development. So in 2000, like I said, the black market, in essence, was used as a place for people to purchase stuff without paying for taxes. So ultimately, they were trying just to get over this and that and get away from and pocket more money into their pockets. So what happened is antiquities, especially ancient antiquities in Persia, Egypt, and the like, they're very, very strict on the sales of that you can't sell this stuff. They belong to whatever country it belongs to, and we'll get more into the international tug of war that over the Persian princess as well. Now, what we know for a fact is that this video appeared on the black market in March of 2000. It showed a picture of a mummy inside of a sarcophagus. The interesting part about the sarcophagus is it actually had Persian markings on it. The disc, the winged disc, which is very famous in Persia at the time. But ultimately, everybody knew that this was like something that no one should be getting into, or no one should be posting this, especially on the black market on the internet, and asking for 600 million rupees, which is equivalent to 11 million U.S. dollars. So they were asking a lot of money. And they wanted it tax-free. So the authorities were kind of told about this one. And it ended up going to the Pakistani police, where they went ahead and did an investigation. And weeks later, they found an individual, a man by the name of Ali Akbar. And it seems that this was the person who put this listing onto the black market. Very interestingly, when the Pakistani police went up to him and they interviewed him, he said that he was only paid to film the video and put it on the black market. He had nothing to do with the transaction itself. He was particularly paid for that money. So, is that who I think it is on this phone? Who's Hatter?
Can you check it out?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sure. And so, what we had is we had this listing, and we ended up having a person who said that he was paid for the video, but to put it onto the black market, and nothing to do with transaction. And so the police went ahead and talked to him about it, and he said that ultimately the man who he got the listing from and got paid from is actually lived in Kedah. Kedah was in Balochistan, Pakistan. I want everybody to say that absolutely fast. yeah, and his name was Wali Muhammad Riki. Hatter, do we know who that is?
That's Adam.
Oh, let me get Adam onto the board here. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Hey, I'm cool. I'm right outside right now, enjoying the cool Ohio night air. Oh man,
oh.
Some of my voice is booming. It's crickets out here, so anytime, be ready. You might have to mute me if, like, my friend might be talking very loud, or, you know, be prepared to mute me at any second, though, because I'm out
okay,
of country,
no,
kind of,
no problem.
Be like a, yeah, thank you.
Hey, Adam, have you ever heard of the Persian princess?
The what? The frozen princess?
The Persian princess. We're going over
the Persian,
this mystery.
No, I've never heard of the Persian princess.
Yeah, what happened in the year 2000, there was a listing on the black market of someone who was trying to sell a mummy and a sarcophagus. And ultimately it went back down, and the man who hired the person to do the video and the listing was actually a tribal leader from Pakistan. But he also, when he was interviewed about it, they found out he was not the man who found it, but he was in possession of it. So ultimately, if you guys can imagine this, you have a bunch of police officers who went back, and they were shown this mummy in a sarcophagus, and it was a real thing. Everybody was thinking, hey, this thing's fake, this thing's fake. All of a sudden, the police said, hey, it's real. So as a person, what would you guys think if suddenly you came up and someone showed you a mummy in a sarcophagus?
Oh, sorry, I was just coming right into it. I would be fucking flabbergasted, bro. I'd be like, this is a fucking real mummy? Like, for real? Damn. Where the hell did this come from?
Yeah,
like, it would be like Cotton Eye Joe. Like, where'd it come from? Where'd it go? How the hell did you get hold of a real mummy, dude? It belongs in a museum.
I agree
like
with
Indiana
you.
Fucking Jones. Like Indiana fucking Jones. This belongs in a museum. Give it back to wherever
from
it came from.
From what I understand, the police were shocked, too. So, Rack, how about you? What would your reaction be to suddenly seeing a mummy, an actual freaking mummy?
I've been to the museum. I don't know, though. If somebody had one, like, right in front of me, I don't know. I would relive my Scooby-Doo days and wait for it to get up out of the sarcophagus and chase me around the room. Looking for Alan. I grew up in the age of Alan's Fun and the candy camera. So,
where's the camera?
No, that's great. That's great.
So, JC,
and Hatter, what would you think?
Well, I'm sort of have a little knowledge about the black market of the Egypt antiquities and such, and the people that go after these guys. Could it have been they were trying to change the lineage, ancestral lineage of the tribes?
Not necessarily.
You know what I mean?
This was put on the black market of the internet.
Okay.
This really didn't really have much to do with the black market on the antiquities. It's crazy.
So it was just the money. It was just the freaking money.
Yeah, it was the money that they were after. Absolutely. So ultimately it came back, and Riki was interviewed by the police, and they found the man who found it. His name was Sharif Shah Baki. Baki was an Iranian living in Pakistan at the time in a small town called Karan. He said he found the sarcophagus after an earthquake. It was sticking out of the ground. And ultimately, when the police did the investigation, they found out, there was an earthquake at the time that he said. So this ultimately turned into that the police ended up confiscating it. They arrested, they arrested Riki and Akbar for trying to sell historical artifacts, but they didn't at the time arrest Baki, but they were planning to get him at a later time. Well, what happened is when they went back to go get Baki, guess who was missing? It was Baki. Baki disappeared and has never been seen since. And they wonder if Baki was even his real name. So this person never ended up getting caught. Now, what was fabulous about this mummy is that it was ornated in gold, of course. You had this golden breastplate right on the chest, and it had a bunch of writings on it. Now, this is where the National Museum, the Pakistani National Museum, ended up aging the mummy at over 2,600. This was 2,600 years old. The reason they aged it so old was the fact that the breastplate had writing that identified her as Rhodogun. Rhodogun was the daughter of Xerxes the Great, probably the greatest Persian king in history. So ultimately, that's what was written on there. And this was an amazing find because no one in Xerxes' bloodline has ever been found. No tombs, no graves, no anything. They say that Xerxes was lost to history. And the odd thing about it is no member of Persian royalty has ever been buried in a sarcophagus. So there was a lot of things that were like, how do we answer this question? What happened here? Was she kidnapped from Egypt and then allowed to have her ceremonial burial? There is also an idea that she was from Egypt and married a prince of Xerxes, one of his sons. So there was very interesting stuff, and this is where the probably the most interesting thing came in. During the time, there was an international tug of war. So who do you think should get the mummy? Should it be the place the mummy was found in? Should it be the country that dates back to the ancestry of those people, ultimately? So it was like Pakistan and Iran were fighting over the possession. Pakistan said, hey, this mummy, this sarcophagus was found in Pakistan, so it belongs to us. Iran says, Persia is part of our heritage, so it belongs to us. Ultimately, who do you think should get it? I would love to know your guys' opinion.
I think the law goes that where it's found, what country it's found in, it retains possession.
Not if it was stolen. If it was stolen from the other country, then
that would have to be, that would have to be proven later.
Adam, which country should get it?
I think do a DNA test and give it to whoever. See where the DNA, what the DNA says, the DNA can't lie, baby. Unless it does lie, well, then that's a whole other story. Because they say that something about 80-some-odd percent of European males can trace their lineage to King Tutankhamun. So you tell me how that one makes sense, and then I'll tell you how it doesn't make sense. So you got a mouse like a motorbike. And it's anyways.
No, that's great. So ultimately, they had this massive international tug of war back and forth in the court systems. Ultimately, Pakistan was given rights, so the mummy actually went into the National Museum, and there it stayed, even though the courts were still going back and forth. And at this time, it picked up international news all over the world. People were talking about the Persian princess this, the Persian princess that. And it was just a interesting story on how it developed. Because not only did those two countries fight about it, but all of a sudden the Taliban ended up getting involved in the tug of war. They said, well, this is a symbol of power and might, and it should belong to us. And the city that it was found in, Quetta, they kept on saying, well, send it back to us. We found it here. It should belong to where it was found. And so they had these massive, massive things. And ultimately what happened is across the world, suddenly archaeologists were getting interviewed left and right and this way and that way. And people really didn't know what was going on. It was a firestorm of media and interviews and everything like that. It was absolutely crazy.
So the ramifications of this find was to finally get a burial site of a royal family, and it dates. Now, you said it had a golden breastplate or something?
Yeah,
so
the golden breastplate. Probably the two most important things in this whole thing are the original video and the golden breastplate. Those are probably the two most important pieces of evidence in this whole story, because they're going to come back and twist this thing and put it right on its ear. So we got this media firestorm throughout the world saying, okay, what do you think about the Persian princess? Talking to archaeologists, and they're talking this and they're talking that. Well, there's this particular archaeologist. His name was Dr. Oscar White Muscalera. He was from the United States, and he's probably considered one of the leading archaeologists of all time on Persian history. Now, he passed away in 2022. But he was asked about this whole incident. And what he had to say was probably the most interesting part of this whole story. He said, yeah, I know about the video. I got the video about 4 months prior to its listing on the black market. They were trying to sell me a mummy. So ultimately, these people were trying to sell Dr. Muscalera the mummy prior than putting it on the black market for sale. And at the time, Dr. Muscalera didn't want to do it because of several discrepancies within it. Pretty much, Dr. Muscalera said the whole thing was a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why.
The breastplate they found... The breastplate and other things they found with the mummy, aren't they in itself antiquities? Wouldn't they be?
Well, here's the problem. The breastplate was filled with grammatical errors. The history of how it was supposed to be presented was inaccurate. And the whole thing about it, it was all around historically inaccurate as well. Her name, you know, when it said, my name is Rodagun, daughter of Xerxes. Problem was, it wasn't written in Persian. It was written in Greek.
Oh, no.
it was written in Greek.
Didn't think that one out.
When you were talking about the mummy, was that they could have taken the breastplate and hung it on the thing.
Some specific key things about this. So, like I said, the most important things was the video, which they gave to Dr. Muscalera to begin with, and the breastplate, which is all the errors on it. So ultimately, it was crazy. The inscription itself, there was so much that was going on. Asma Ibrahim, who happened to be the curator of the Museum of Pakistan, she went ahead and started her own investigation on this particular thing. She wanted to know the truth behind it. And the truth is actually probably more mind-boggling than anything else. So you have this mummy, you have this body. What are you going to do? Here's where your DNA, Adam, comes into play.
Right.
Because the DNA itself kind of and the forensics behind it told us
more confusing
when this person died, who this person, but not who this person was. And that's probably the greatest mystery behind this whole thing. So Dr. Muscalero went ahead and identified it as a forgery. Okay, he said that there was a bunch of grammatical errors and it was historically inaccurate. So Asma Ibrahim went ahead and pulled her own. So she had a CT scan done of the mummy itself. And the problem was it was, okay, all of the bandages and some of the other stuff looked great. They looked absolutely perfect for a mummy.
Yeah.
But the problem was when the CT scan was taken, there was no heart. And in mummies from Egypt, the heart was an important part of the mummy to be preserved inside the body. Now, there was a lot of inaccurate ways that this person was mummified as well. So there was a lot of things that were going bad. The wood itself, when they did carbon dating on the wood, they found that it was in the sarcophagus was only 250 years old. So the sarcophagus itself was fraudulent. Everything within this thing was pretty fraudulent, even though they made it look as good as possible. How did they make the body look like it was mummified? They went ahead and filled it with salt and baking powder. That dried it out, and pretty much you couldn't see who it was. You couldn't tell who it was. It was like they totally went ahead and took her identity away. And on the sarcophagus, on the breastplate itself, they found pencil marks. So that breastplate cannot be an antiquity because they were the ones that ended up doing it. So ultimately, it was everything came down to, okay, this was a fraud. This was a fake. This was somebody doing something criminal. And this is the story of the Persian princess in a nutshell. Now, there is more to go with it. Like the teeth were removed after this person was dead. And here's the deal. They found out that this was a woman. She was between 20 to 25 years old. This was the forensics behind it. So there was, because of the baking powder and salt, they could not get any DNA samples. It was an impossibility because the DNA was destroyed by the chemicals they put into it. She died, but they could tell when she died. She died between 1990 and 1996.
You know, when findings like this happen and there's questions, usually there's a false, whoever has possession of it will claim it's a fake to give them more time, either or they claim it disappears. So the side of the antiquities that are supposed to be legit is just as crooked sometimes as the people that are trying to run the black market.
Yeah,
this is
overall an insane story. This story in general is absolutely crazy. Let me get some thoughts on it before we go any further into it. Rack, what do you think about the whole story, the whole scenario that we've gone over?
Well, I mean, from the beginning, my first thought was, you know, the breastplate could have came from anywhere. So, you know, I wouldn't have counted that in the fact that, you know, of anything more than it looks like they're trying to hide, you know, where the actual age of the mummy. Never mind that it looked like a forgery or you know, that there was misspellings and whatever else, you know. So I wouldn't have counted that among the find itself. But when you start looking into the mummy and the bandages and stuff, you know, you got to do like the person that decided to do the forensic examination and start picking it apart piece by piece, like with the CT scan and whatnot, because there's ways of, like, you know, even with the bandages, they could take them off a legitimate mummy that's like worthless or whatever, that's of the right, you know, age, and then use that. Like, you know, forgers have all kinds of tricks for making something realistic. So there's too many bits and pieces and you know, in a sense, moving parts to for it to be legitimate, and say, you know, without any doubt that you know, well, that this is authentic. You know, the video is kind of worthless. And, you know, the guy's trying to prove that he pulled it out. You know, that's like, you know, okay. So, you know, the night before, you could have planted the stupid sarcophagus. So. Then discovering it is like opening up Geraldo's vault, the Capone's vault. You know, it's like someone could have been in there whenever and emptied it. So, you know, opening it up on camera doesn't prove anything other than you opened it up. Anyways, I mean, you know, it's just too inconsistent in too many ways to duplicate, forge what they're trying to sell it as. So yeah, I wouldn't have trusted it from the beginning.
Excellent. Adam, what do you think?
The story so far, I mean, who? I'm like, the story is crazy. And I was just invited here, and I'm coming here like, whoa, man, I forgot I'm not supposed to drop F-bombs and curse words and stuff, so my bad on all that. So I don't forget that sometimes on the radio shows and all that. Where's the poetry? This is a very engrossing story. There's a lot of twists and turns. And a knee-jerk reaction, knowing the heads up, I'm like, wow. You got to take your time, do your due diligence. It's a lot of hard work. I hope they catch this guy. Should have known. Who's in Grant's tomb? Grant. Right, common sense. You want to jump to the most obvious answer. And sometimes that's the hook, and that's where they get you. The most obvious answer isn't always the answer, but that's also Murphy's Law. But Murphy's Law also has the opposite and equal response as well. You know what I mean? Sometimes when you're not in the way, you are the way. So that, I can say that and leave it at that. That's about all I got to say about that.
Great response. Hatter, you want to add something to that?
They had to know that an intense inspection of the mummy would give it away. So they were pretty much counting on the sell on the black market, right? Because they had to know the writing in Greek. And the process for mummification back then was a true process. And to copy that, I find it, maybe that was some of the discrepancies, but they had, I'm sure at some point they did, they went, oh crap, they're looking at it. And so they walked away because they knew that an intense investigation would show that. So they were probably counting on just a quick sell on a black market and get away. Sounds to me, anyway.
Yeah.
I think you're right about that. Ultimately, the two guys, what were their names? Akbar and Riki were arrested and charged with fraud. No one here. Here's where we go into the last part with the, where the theories to how they ended up getting this woman. And there's two major theories that come into play. Theory number one, you know, she ended up dying between 1990 and 96. They said that there's a lot of people that believe that it was grave robbers. And they took a recent dead person and they ended up doing this mummification process. And the important part to understand about the mummification process, the people who did this needed to have a deep understanding of ancient history and an understanding of a human anatomy. So those were the two things that were probably required to pull off something like this, even though they didn't pull it off per se. When they actually gave all of this information to the people, it was kind of something that was a little bit on the crazy part about it. So that's theory number one. Theory number two was when they did an autopsy of this woman's death, they found that the cause of death was a blunt trauma to the base of the neck. Now, some people say that this could have been an accident, and she died from an accident, and then the grave robbers grabbed her, or that she could have been murdered, and her body was used as a get-rich-quick scheme. There's no proof that she was murdered, but there's a lot of speculation on the fact that she may have been murdered. The Pakistani police actually opened up a murder investigation when they found out when she was murdered. But ultimately, it's near impossible to know exactly who this woman was. And that's the problem that they're finding. So which theory do you guys buy into?
Well, I think the availability of a dead body in that part of the world wouldn't be too hard to get. So I don't know if it would have been murder as such, more than just here's one. You know, I would say an opportunity, a chance. They had this plan. They went out and found the bodies. And did it. I don't think there was anything. This is my own belief. I don't think they went and murdered somebody just for that. I think the availability of bodies were.
I disagree. I think if they want, it would be too much work for them to go and try and find a body and dig it up without getting caught. It's easier for them to grab an unknown, no relative prostitute off the street and just kill them and then, you know, mummify them. You know, someone that, you know, by nature, there's nobody looking out for them. There's nobody that cares. They've got no family and nothing other than maybe a pimp that's not going to report their disappearance. So they just, and one of them, Akbar or the other dude, could have been the pimp. Who the hell knows, you know? But like that quick blow to the back of the head would have been an easy way, you know, quick end, and then they go through the mummification process and doctor it up. You know, a corpse that they stole, you know, from a grave around that time would have already been embalmed, would have already had evidence of the Y incision or whatever else, you know. Well, maybe it wasn't, that's only if they get, I guess, autopsy, so maybe it was just a death or a pauper's death or something. But still, you know, they're risking pulling out a body that was already worked on, and, you know, that would give them more problems.
Any coroner or whatever they call it back then would have had the bodies that could be taken. I mean, before the process. I think you're right,
Adam,
though. That's part of the evidence. Yeah.
May I interject?
Adam, murder or grave robbers?
That's my only option. Fraud. spell it murder.
Absolutely. Murder?
It's murder. Murder fraud.
Yeah.
Murder fraud. And I'll tell you, so you're going all the way to Egypt. You got to remember, there's a time before the time of the gods. So you're talking about ancient Egypt. You're talking about the time of the Sphinx when you're talking about the jungles of Africa. The jungles of Kemet. You're talking about the jungles.
About the woman.
I know. The Persian princess, yes. But you got to think, these practices go way, way back. And you're talking about the old kingdom and the new kingdom. You're talking about a divided kingdom. You're talking about priests. You're talking about peasants. You're talking about people that knew how to do mummification before they knew how to do mummification. You're talking about there were poor people that knew how to do mummification. You're talking about, look, there's a case. I want to bring this up during all this long storytelling. Where's the poetry, man? Okay. But look. You can fake a lot of things in this world, but you can't fake the funk. And, there's this guy, dude. He was notorious, and he bombed himself, dude. He was a Mormon, and he would sell the Mormons fake, bona fide fake Mormon trinkets. And I mean trinkets on all levels, baubles, fucking fake paper documents, and he knew how to fake it, and he would sell it to them. There has not been one single Mormon artifact, paper, whatever it is, that's ever been dug up that's real. And he knew how to fake it and sell it to these people. And he was Mormon. And he would sell it to them. He would fake the documentation, and he would sell it to them. He was Mormon. And he would sell it to them themselves. Bold-faced liar. Bold-faced evildoer. I don't want to say evildoer. Evil is a strong word. But backwards says live. Either way, look, just because it's Greek, look at the Rosetta Stone. Nobody, even the dumb English, oh, I'm English. Oh, I can go to Africa and dig in the dirt. Okay, good thing. You're an archaeologist. That's what you do. But guess what? You can't read hieroglyphics until you found the Rosetta Stone. Why was it the Rosetta Stone that cracked the code? Why? Why? Because it had hieroglyphics. It had the the long hand of hieroglyphics, how to read it, and it had Greek on it. And because it had, and it had Latin. Because it had those four key languages together, they finally figured out how to read these tricky hieroglyphics. Walk like an Egyptian. So because of that, they were finally able to crack hieroglyphics. If it were not for that Rosetta Stone piece, only a piece of the Rosetta Stone, they would have never, ever, 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 maybe, ever, maybe, right? That's the maybe, the question mark. Why? Because we know that we know not. And what is the not? The Gorgon not? What did this great fucking philosopher say? Please, I don't mean to cuss, if I cuss. What did he say to great Alexander the Great? Stand out of my light. This great philosopher, this dirty bum of philosopher, he said it to the great guy. And what did the great Alexander the Great do? He just cut the Gorgon knot. He just cut it. That's how he solved the knot. He just cut it because he was Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great wasn't even the greatest conqueror ever. You know who it was? Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan has more DNA in this world intermingled with people than any other great conqueror ever.
No, you're right about that. I know about that. Yeah.
Right. And Genghis Khan, though, he is, and they still can't find his tomb. You know who's in Grant's tomb? Grant. And why is 80-something percent of Europeans mixed with Team Tutankhamun's DNA? I don't know. Is there a curse to the mummy? I don't know. I want justice for the Persian princess. Let's hope we find Baki. You know,
I love that
the last name was Riki, because there's a Riki style massage therapy. Riki therapy, you heard of this? It's a good therapy.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that. Yep. Now here,
let's get
the here was a little back thing. In 2005, they said they were going to inter the princess finally and give her a proper burial. It happened in 2008 after all of the bureaucratic paperwork went through.
Yeah,
so
red tape.
She did get a proper burial in 2008. And there was an artist in Jerusalem that created an exhibit in her honor in 2016.
Thank
so
God.
She
old
was,
news. Okay.
Yeah, she was given some closure in a way. Not much, but she was given some closure. So this all around it was just something that was absolutely on the wild side. I'm like,
well, we gotta catch Baki.
Yeah, we do gotta catch Baki. I agree with that. They don't think that that was his real name anymore. They were thinking he was pretty much the mastermind of this whole thing, and he might have even murdered the woman.
He could have. It could have been his own daughter. You never know with the streaky law, the Sharia law and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. You have to be careful because paper can be faked. Papyrus can be made. Things can be done. You have no idea the lengths people will go to bury and try to hide the truth, the truth,
that's
the truth. What is the riddle?
What was that, Rack?
That's what this is the evidence of, the lengths that some people will go to. As far as investigation goes, you know, there's new technology now and better things that they could have done. Like if they had the body now, one of the things they could do is take the skin off and put the markers on and guesstimate the height of whatever and recreate the face. They could actually do that now. They've got, you know, this whole process where they could take a skull and kind of, you know, estimate the depth of the skin for the cheeks and then the eyes and the chin and everything else, actually rebuild the face.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't know that. Obviously, they couldn't determine eye color and hair color or any of that, but they could at least get a basic framework of what her face might have looked like. But anyway, one of the things that happens in a lot of things where investigation is involved is if they're that determined, you know, later on they'll be like, well, this new process is in DNA. Let's see if we can pull this out or do this or do that, you know, because they didn't have that back then. You know, back then when they were doing DNA, they had different methods, but now there's better ways of pulling out DNA and inert stuff and cell replication and all kinds of craziness. So, you know, this situation has been put to bed and she's already been interred and you know, let go. But, you know, it all depends on determination and doggedness,
right.
You know, yeah. How much people really want to go nuts. I mean, they found out it's a fraud. People went to jail.
Yeah. You're right. You're
pretty
right.
Much.
Yeah, you're right.
All right. Let's get into a poem here. I'm going to go ahead and read this for Deb, and then we will go a little bit further. This is called Murdered and Mutilated for Money. She wrote it as a vignette. So, one, after the ground rattles from earthquake vibrations, archaeologists discover a stone sarcophagus with a mummified woman inside. Then a chain of men set out to stockpile cash by advertising for buyers on the black market to sell mummy labeled as the Persian princess for the staggering price of $11 million. This sent archaeological investigators on a wild journey. Two, forensic archaeologists analyzed the chemical structure of the mummy, and evidence pointed to the fact that the female mummy was 2,600 years old. Politicians and museum curators from the borders of two countries battled for ownership of her body, while literally experts translated engraved script from the breastplate of the structure. Three, scientists used data from CT scans, chemical testings, and carbon-14 dating, building a profile of the mummy. Four, her broken neck triggered police to open a murder investigation, uncovering a dark, disturbing scene. Smashed cervical vertebrae in her neck point to blunt force trauma. All her internal organs were removed, abdominal cavity filled with powdered substance, a body caked in chemicals to dry the corpse over several months. Five, findings indicated that she died in 1996. A 4'7" tall, sweet 16 woman pointing to the fact that the mummy was not a princess, just a tool in a modern-day hoax, murdered and mutilated for money. Poem. Ooh, nicely done, Deb. I love this. Let me get some other people commenting first so I can catch myself a little bit. Hatter, what did you think of Deb's poem?
Yeah, pretty much reported this, the story. I got to stick to what I think at some point the people, the guys that were trying to make money on the black market selling this piece, by this time they're going, oh, crap, we've got to walk away because they know it's not real. So they didn't plan on it. It sort of contradicts itself because they've been through so much trouble with the faceplate that says, even though there was Greek writing on some of the things that were in the lithium, it all fell apart big time. Deb wrote it well. I tried writing it, but it wasn't happening. too much information.
No problem. Adam, what do you think about that poem?
Well, I listened to your, it is full of meter. You know, she loves the rhyme and the meter, and the vignette was a beautiful way to go about it, break it in. What was it, 5 vignettes? I didn't keep track. It was beautiful. Like, Deb has a way of using rhyme and meter and timing as a vignette. I haven't really seen her vignette styles, man. She's a talent, grade A talent. She does amazing things, following the rules and staying in the box. That's cool. I liked it. It was very good, very well done. It told a story, as another poet had said. It told a story flat out. And, you know, there's always more tales to be told the more lengths people go. And we don't know everything. Oxygen turned, and that's good. And that's the way, you know, people went to jail. And it's just like, you know, if you want to keep digging, as we know, everybody gets dirty. And we can keep pointing the finger. And it's like, I just got so much more I could say, but I'm just listening. And I've been told I'm not a good listener, but I'm one of the best listeners. You can only imagine how well a little kid can listen when he has ADD and he's not allowed to take medicine for it. And he has autism on the spectrum and he can't take nothing for it. And he has to learn on his own how to deal with his issues. And you listen to Korn, but you don't get to deal with those issues like a good little boy should, because a little good little boy should take his medicine. And I don't get no medicine. So I take my medicine. My medicine sometimes is just a cigarette and a beer. And I try my best to I try my best to maintain, man. And I do what I do, and I try my best to be the best I can be sometimes. And sometimes I say some off the wall stuff. I try not to cuss. But what's a cuss? Something they call it cursing. It's just words, man. Words can hurt people. Sticks and stones, love. And what bounces off to me sticks to you, and they call that glue. Oh, we can glue together. What's a factory? I don't know. These are just words. We all speak just things. I don't mean no ill will to no man, no woman either. Woman, that's a W-O in front of man. Whoa. He had another W. That's wow. So it upside down, that spells mom. My mind is an abacus. What's an abacus? Abracadabra. Okay, now we're talking wild things. That's wild, bro, for real. And princess, Persian princess, that's cool. Persia. Xerxes line should have been snuffed out. Why? We came after Sparta, dude. This is Sparta. Right. It wasn't just 300 men. It was about 1,000 or so. They stood against just long enough for the Greeks to stand their ground. They had to sacrifice every one of them. Their arrows would blot out the sun. So blot out the sun, bro. We got shields. We'll stand one more day, and they'll keep fighting until every man's dead. So until the Greek reinforcements can show up and fight against Persia. Hey, it was just one battle. So you live long enough to fight the war. And that's what we talk about. Live long enough to fight another day. Sometimes that's running. They may call you a coward. Hey, at least you live to fight another day. But sometimes they call you a yella. What does that mean? I don't know. I'm just a gunslinger. I shoot from the hip. I've always been random. And they call me magic. They call me magic sometimes, but I don't have the magic stick. Maybe I do. Another way. In another life. Anyways, that's my comment. Deb, keep on being a Debbie. You're bad in a bad way. So cool. They don't even know how cool you are. I would never call you a chili, but I'm a beatnik. I'm so beat with the Nick, I'm just on the edge of time, and I'll save you every time because I know you said one insulting thing to me once, and I'm going to shut my mouth down because I'm doing poetry right now, free-flowing. So I'm going to stop, and thank you for the time to comment. Debbie, you're awesome.
Excellent. Rack, you're up. What do you think?
Two things. Just a quick aside. Hatter was talking about the con. You know, the criminal mindset, sometimes they'll actually consider a con an investment, the short con versus a long con. They'll actually spend some money because they know in the long run they're going to get back, you know, 10 times what they're spending, you know. So even whatever it costs them, I think, like that gold breastplate probably was, you know, it has weight in gold. It was a forgery and everything else. But, you know, if they would have sold the thing for $11 million, that would have meant nothing. So the idea is, you know, if it costs them, you know, a little bit to make a lot, you know, that business practice is what those stupid criminals are kind of trying to employ. As far as Deb's poetry, though, I thought it was excellent. Synopsis of the story itself, with one exception. I got to shake my finger at you, Deb. You said that they found a stone sarcophagus. I think what JCA said was that they carbon dated the wooden sarcophagus, which means that, you know, you got that part wrong. But other than that, you did, they found the sarcophagus all right. It just might not have been stone.
Yeah, it was wood. It was a wooden sarcophagus.
Yeah, 250 years old. It was wood.
Yep. Absolutely.
250 years
but
old.
But I'll tell you what.
They could take that wood.
I do love her detailing, though. The details that
yeah,
she goes
course.
Into.
Yeah, she's a great writer.
The word,
she's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, it is amazing. I love how she gets into the details. She gets into the woods of the
wood,
thing
or,
and lets everybody know exactly what's going on. I think she did a great job. Yeah, there were five vines in that vignette, and, you know, she did a wonderful job in the presentation. I like that she used a vignette because you're dealing with something that has so much time span through it. You got so much time going
Absolutely.
On. Because of it, you know, so I think she did a wonderful job on that one. All right, I'm going to go ahead and read my poem right now.
Cool,
I call
you
it
Rodagoon. Okay, right?
Rodagoon.
You write poetry? You write poetry, JCA?
Yeah. I think I do. I think I do. All right, this is called Rodagoon. And it goes a little like this. Persian princess pleated breastplate of safflower gold, pencil prick inscriptions, Greek where Persian folds. Xerxes, king of daughters, was hers, but in salted lay. Quetta quakes in caverns, tug of war that nations belay. Smoke screen video scribbling, black market for rupee rich. Earth ripped open in tremors, sarcophagus poked from ditch. Criminal's canvas body, murder or picked from lot. Persian princess interred, fraud found, antiquities plot. Poem.
Boom.
That's excellent. Hattie, are you going to run comments? Did we lose you?
I don't think we did. Hatter, unmute.
That was a great thing.
Yeah, I was talking away. Yeah. Yeah, I'm
fascinated. Boom, dynamite, bro. JCA, that was killer, bro. That was an A-bomb, if I could say so myself.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I am the original A-bomb.
Go ahead, Hatter.
It's a fascinating story with so many unanswered questions, and every time you would probably get an answer, there's two more questions to be asked of why. It's probably a lot more simplistic than we are giving it credit for. Probably would you try to get a quick sell black market, you know, no names kind of thing, and they got busted. And they got caught.
I got a bridge to sell you, Hatter.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't Einstein, a lot of Einsteins back there either. I mean,
I'm not getting tied to.
You wrote it in Greek? Oh, my God. Yeah. I didn't know other ways. That's all I know.
Roads? Who needs roads?
I'm going to give you the mic right now.
You can't boot me, did you?
Yeah, we
still got you, Adam.
I thought your piece was great, Jay. I really enjoy your synopsis of the story. And when you say smokescreen, you know, that was more of a conclusion than a synopsis. But, you know, that's exactly what it turned out to be. So, you know, that was the perfect word for it because, you know, the anatomy of a con. And I think one of the names was Connor or something. Con was in there somewhere. So, I mean, you use, you know, brilliant observation and you managed to wrap it up in a way that you know, it's not easy to take something that's factual like that and then make it rhyme and make sense at the same time sometimes. And, you know, you did a great job doing all of that. You know, you know, it was a great story, and you picked something really interesting, and I guess it's not controversial anymore, except for the fact that where did the body come from? You know, so they had an investigation and they closed it. So I'm more interested in what happened with that investigation than with the sarcophagus, because that was kind of like, you know, the dumbasses were counting on, you know, getting away with selling it on the black market, like we've all been saying. You know, they thought that, you know, what they did was enough to hide all of their possible missteps and, you know, and their missing bombs and the wrong spelling on breastplate and pencil marks and everything else. I thought they could get away with that. Otherwise, they wouldn't have, you know, went ahead and went so far. But, you know, too many people got involved with too many. They had, you know, a good idea, I think, that you know, well, if there's no bloodline to compare it to, then even if they do find a way to get the DNA, they're not going to be able to prove it one way or the other, you know, that it's not what we say it is. But they made too many other missteps. So, you know, it was a great story, though. And I love, you know, your explanation with the smokescreen and everything else. And it was great.
They probably followed the instructions to the T, sat back and went perfect.
No, they screwed up the bombing instructions. They just screwed up the bombing instructions.
Yeah.
Embalming, mummification, rather. Not
yeah.
Bombing, the mummification instruction.
All right. Adam, you got the mic.
Where they said it was found. I'm sorry.
They said Adam has a mic. I thought I already mic'd it up enough. JCA.
I appreciate what everybody said.
Yeah, I can do the A-bomb stamp of approval, bro. You dropped that. You dropped it, and I said boom. I was like, boom. That's dynamite, bro. I don't know what I can say, bro. That was stellar, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. You know what? I'll tell you what, you guys want to share something else? I don't know if we really have anything that's...
I'm typing up right now. As you guys were just chatting, I was typing up a poem to go with the Persian Princess. I was just writing it. I wrote the title. I'm writing the poem right now. I'm trying
to
get it written.
We'll have it a little bit in here. I'm going to talk about next week's show once again. In 2 weeks' time, we will have a show on cults. Some of the most deadliest cults ever. We're going to be talking about the People's Temple, Jim Jones, Jonestown. We will be talking about Heaven's Gate, one of the largest mass suicides in history. And we will also be talking about the Manson family. So, we are going to go over at least three cults.
Will you be serving blue oysters?
No.
I was looking at Blue Oyster. I was looking at Blue Oyster from a music show. Yeah, Blue Oyster.
No, we're not going to do Blue Oyster Cult. But, we're gonna be taking a look into the mindset of the followers a lot. We're going to be talking about how the leaders actually were able to talk people into doing what they did.
Did you use the Anthill Gang?
What's that?
Do not forget to include the Ant
Hatfield gang. That guy was in, and was definitely brutal and spent his time in Canada. From America,
okay.
But spent his time in Canada. The Anthill gang. That guy was average.
I will 100% look into it. I am also thinking about using Shinrinkyo, which is the Japanese group that attacked the subways
international
with the sarin gas. Yeah.
You got Waco too, the Davidians.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Branch Davidians as well. There's a lot of people that I can include in this. I'm thinking about ones that deal with mass murder or terrorist activities or mass suicide. Those I'm thinking about doing in first. I might go into another show on cults. But we will see, because, like I said, they're all just intense things to talk about. I've always wondered, okay, why do people follow other people? But, you know, there's some people that are just looking for a place that they can belong, and they just fall into that trap. So we'll talk more about it and get more about it.
JCH Next Show is sponsored by Kool-Aid.
Don't drink.
Actually, it wasn't Kool-Aid. It was Flavor-Aid.
Jones down.
It was Flavor-Aid. Jim Jones was Flavor-Aid. It wasn't Kool-Aid.
That's an interesting fact.
That is a factoid.
Do you guys remember back, I don't know how old you are, the Tylenol poisoning? It was an Oregon commune, a bunch of... it was a cult also. They were growing vegetables for the town, and then somebody realized it was them, and they refused to buy it or something. They started harassing them, and they ended up poisoning the Tylenol bottle, put poison in one of them.
Yeah.
That's why there's tabs and cover, there's little covers on every one of those bottles now. It's because of the Tylenol.
Tamper evident.
Yeah, that was a cult also.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to wait for
Adam.
Yeah, we'll live in living color. Can't do that song here. Well, I love that song. But, yeah, we're not doing Blois or Cult. We're not doing In Living Color.
I'm sorry, Jay. Two second sidebar. Real quick, Hatter, music trivia. Blois the Cult, do you know one of the names they toured under?
Jeez. I saw Blois the Cult in Sacramento in California, and they headlined the venue over Lynyrd Skynyrd. Knew nothing about him at that time.
When they became popular, they would tour a Soft White Underbelly so that their fans would have a chance to see to get the tickets before they got mobbed.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That's cool. Soft White Underbelly.
Concert I ever saw. Yeah.
Soft Underbelly. Yeah, good band. And we'll never forget more cowbell, will we? But
watch that. I just watched that before the show.
I don't know if it's me, but I need more cowbell.
Now I'm thinking of Will Ferrell, dude. Now I'm thinking of Will Ferrell in the SNL skit, dude.
Yep, exactly. That was their Blue Oyster Cult song. All right, Adam, anytime you're ready, let us know.
All right, I'm ready right now. I just finished up my poem.
All right.
This is called The Persian Princess, and I have a bunch of typos. I'm going to try to read it without the typos, though. Stars cross with a dash of hashish upon the lips of the last lips kissed by the rose black as skull candy, which crushes and leaps from a lover's lost locks. kept in lockets and ever pockets, where we rodeo and last with lofts and kindly know there is no end to the love that lends another sleeve to Rome. Where is the one who in the balms, a mummy known as the Persian princess, her star fell so far beyond the perimeter, with the starless fog banshee screams of idolatry. Her love was greater than a divide beyond worlds. Who sleeps with the guppy fish? We sleep, we dream, for the gold of another's beguiled misfortune. Fortune teller tells, another fancy lad to buy. He and she love to no end the doors of tranquility is true lucidity and perception. Where Morrison Hotel meets Pam's glass dragon to spiral into epiphany of nevermore. And Pam swashbuckles hooks in her child and saves him from becoming a pirate. Wendy gives up and Tinkerbell never gets jealous. Alice saves Hatter from going mad. We wake up happy and alive and turned into a Grand Canyon. AZ, love. And that's the end of the poem.
Oh, I love it. I love how you went along there. Yeah. Yeah, I like the – was that a Jim Morrison reference I heard in there?
Yeah, Jim and Pam, right? 27 Club. So Pam – look, Pam was into heroin. Jim never touched the shit. But at the end of his life, Pam was really deep into heroin. She was dating this other guy's into heroin. They gave Jim a hot dose of heroin. And that's what killed him in the bathtub. And everybody knows it. Even Ray Manzarek knows it. And that movie about the Doors that Oliver Stone did is bullshit. Ray Manzarek even said the movie's bullshit. Everybody loves the movie. People love Oliver Stone. But the movie's bullshit, and everybody knows it. They love the Doors. They know that movie's bullshit. Oliver Stone was making a movie about himself pretending he was Jim Morrison. Jim never liked powders. Jim never liked powders. He never did injectables.
I loved his poetry album. Oh, that thing was just incredible, man.
Right. Jim wanted to get away from all that bullshit, dude. Jim wanted to get away from the hot lamps of the hot life of on stage for the goddamn, oh, damn, cousin. He wanted to get away from it all, dude. He just wanted to be a poet. He just wanted to be a poet and drink his drink and smoke his weed and do his acid and do his shrooms and get away from all the madness. Because he was very educated. He was a lot smarter than they thought he was. And they all called him a rock star. He didn't want to be a rock star. His own daddy said, you're not a rock star, Jim. You can't even sing. And his dad was in the Air Force and all this and all that. Pam, she wanted more. She wanted everything Jim could give her. And Jim tried to give Pam everything he could ever try to give her, dude. And he cheated. Yeah, Jim cheated a little bit here or there. But, God, that was the age of the Aquarius, dude. It was a day of free love. But he loved Pam more than anything. And, yeah, he'd get a little messed up sometimes. But, man, he didn't do all the crazy stuff they tried to make him out to be. He was no monster, dude. Jim loved Pam more than anything in the world, dude. He loved her to the starless night, dude, beyond the perimeter, man. And it's a sad thing that he had to die in a hot bath.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I really love how you spit those words out and how you do take us on a journey in there. And I heard Hatter in there, too, but I really love the way you brought that through that. That was excellent. You did bring us on a journey. Love how you brought the Persian princess in there and everything like that.
I'll try to put it all together through this poem.
No, oh, great. Hatter, what'd you think?
Yeah, for you just writing that was pretty impressive.
I just whipped it out real quick while we were all talking, like just shooting the stuff together right here, right now, bro. Thank you, Hatter. Thank you, JCA.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate that we do have young children on our group now, 13, 14 years.
I know, I forget sometimes, you know what I mean? I'm sorry.
I appreciate that.
That's okay. Don't worry. We're falling under. I make sure everybody knows that this is a PG-13 show, so that there is discretion used, especially in this show.
I was a college level when I was a little boy in school, so I could read and stuff. Like, I watched bad movies when I was a little kid. I was accelerated. I didn't know it, though. You know what I mean? I didn't know I was college level in the grade school, man. I didn't know that. I didn't know any better. I'm sorry.
Rack, what do you think?
Well, first off, it's impressive that you banged that out in, you know, the time that you did, because, you know, that was great. And then you went from Persian princess all the way down to, you know, to Hatter and everything else. That was impressive too. And you know, plus the rhyme and flow to begin with. You got that rap thing going, and you, it's like a freight train. There's no stopping you. That was amazing.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you, Rick. Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah, 44
well,
on my laptop.
We're going to finish the show up here, but before I do, I'm going to do what I do on every single show, give everybody one last thing to say about this show, about what we were talking about, what we got coming up. Rack, I'll start with you. Any last words?
What's the show that's coming up again? I had something quippy to say about it, but now I forgot. You're doing about on... What was it? Okay. I already, okay. I'm done. I enjoy the show. I enjoy the mystery. I enjoy the talking. You know, it's really easy to you know, read a poem and have dissect it and everything else. It's the discussion that the poem generates, I think, that makes it interesting. And you know, that's kind of what you did. You know, it was, you know, consider it like, you know, a long prompt, but, you know, it has to be thought-provoking. It has to be interesting to inspire something, and I think that's what you did. You did a good job with it.
Thank you. Adam, any last words?
Justice for the Persian princess. I raised my fist in the air. Trust me. Justice, full justice. I want the full justice for the Persian princess.
I agree. And Hatter, any last words?
Yeah, we got to send him a stern letter. On the 12th, there'll be a Hatter jukebox, and we'll be visiting Blind Faith, the group. A band.
Oh, cool.
If you know about, they've heard. They've heard the name, but the evolution of the band is quite incredible. So visiting.
Hey, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know what that is, though. That sounds cool, though, Adder.
There's a band, Blind Faith. That's what he's talking about.
I'm thinking
right.
of Faith No More. Sorry.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. So my next show is on St. Patrick's Day with the Colts. Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that. So
wow.
It'll be on the 17th, which I'm looking forward to. But then I do take the third Sundays off, so there will not be a show on the 31st. We'll get one in 2 weeks and go back into it next month. So
with that,
I want to thank Adam. I want to thank Hatter. I want to thank Rack, all you guys for showing up. Thank Deb for writing in the background. I really appreciate each and every one of you. And like I said, this has been Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem. And next show, as we pound it to the ground, is Hope. So we're looking forward to everybody else joining us, and I am glad that we were able to bring you the mystery of the Persian princess. With that, I want to wish everybody a great night. Thank you guys for showing up.
Thank you, JPA.
Good show.
Good show, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.